You're listening to the Online Pastor Coach Podcast, the show that brings you new and fresh ways to connect with your digital church, with your hosts, Joey Santos and Jason Morris.
I'm so glad to get back to this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is just fun. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's so glad. Listen, I think it'd be good for us to give a little bit of updates here because a lot has changed. I think a lot has changed. Both of our camps. That's why we kind of took this long break. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, there's a lot of change. So let me start with you, because you went through a big change, right? I mean, you're still doing ministry. You never left the ministry, but it just looks different. So what does the ministry mm-hmm. look like to you right now?
Right now, it's more. Investing in leaders. It's like kind of like what Paul was talking about, you know, dedicate yourselves to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. It's more like that in a less formal environment. You know, it's like when we get out of the notion that church or discipleship can occur outside of an event or, you know, anyway. Mm-hmm. That's another conversation. But the point being is before, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's just a different way of doing it.
Yeah.
Before, you know, global innovation pastor, helping leaders globally within the confines of a local church. Now, that local church, amazing. And that was part of the reason why I stayed there so long was, you know, we were able to influence thousands of other churches and, you know, in a multiplying, you know, church planting movements and stuff like that. So that was great. However, I began to see that, you know, this is just one local church. What if every church is like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And it started to get me to wonder, okay, especially through COVID and post-COVID, watching many churches, including the one I was a part of, struggle with, okay, how do we manage this hybrid environment that we find ourselves in right now? Mm-hmm. And I had enough struggles, you know, with just one church. I can only imagine what other churches were doing because, you know, we were kind of ahead of the curve in a lot of ways. And so I began to realize, you know what, I need to position myself not for my sake, but for the kingdom's sake, to be able to help more than just one church, for the most part, with their online expression of church. Mm-hmm. This way, you know, I could help a lot of churches, and that's what I get to do now, as well as imagine and create new ways, more tools for the Big C Church. Because, and you know this because, you know, we've had lots of conversations, and every time I get a chance to talk to a particular business that was creating tools for the church, mm-hmm. I'd have a lot of opinions as to how that needed to happen and needed to happen today, yesterday in some cases. And then I realized, you know what, I need to, you know, put myself in their shoes, be, instead of just a critic or someone who is, you know, helpful with ideas, be one that can actually come alongside and really implement stuff. And so in my mind, I feel like where I'm at right now, I've had such great conversations with people that are making the tools that all of us use in mm-hmm. the church world. That it feels like already, even, you know, 5 months in, that it's kind of worth it. So, because it was a risk for sure, you know, walking away from, you know, full, you know, like that, using that old term, full-time Christian ministry.
Yeah, I know.
That's, you know, and that's all I've known for, you know, as soon as I got out of getting my master's, 6 months later, I was in, you know, Paraguay, South America as a missionary. When I was 25, it's been a long time that I've been in this space in Christian ministry like that full time. And so, yeah, this feels a little, I don't know, it's at first it took me a while to get my equilibrium in this space. And it's not, I mean, Resi, technically, it's a for-profit business that yeah. serves the church primarily, but it has other clients too. And so it took me a while to figure out, okay, how does this system work now? You know, and I feel like I'm not there yet, but I'm getting closer. So it's starting to feel like, oh yeah, I'm able to help a lot more churches and have conversations like these that we're having right now to open people's perspective on how these tools can be used and what kind of new tools can we create so that it makes everybody's job easier. Because the last thing a pastor needs to be is a technical person. That's not how he's gifted. Yeah. He's gifted to be a minister, right? He wants to concentrate yeah. on people. But because the ways that a lot of our tools are structured and our systems are structured, you have to be a businessman and a technician to run church. And that I don't know that it should be that way. So that's what I'm trying to make the tools way easier to use, give people lots more information so that they can a little bit do the pastoral work, not just more efficiently, but qualitatively better.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, you know, pastors, I know because I was one, you know, we are going to give an account before Jesus one day of the people that he sent to us in the same way that Jesus did in his prayer, you know, John 17, yep. he's like, talking about, you know, everybody, he's talking to the Father, everybody that you gave me, I've, you know, taken care of and have invested in, and I only lost one, you know, which always is, you know, is a consolation to me. Cause if Jesus loses somebody, then okay, it's fine. You know, you're going to lose people. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah.
But you can hear that pastor's heart from Jesus in that final prayer that he gives mm-hmm. to the Father, where he feels that sense of responsibility. And I know yeah. that every pastor feels that. A pastor that's worth his salt feels the responsibility of the people that God has entrusted him to care for.
Yeah.
And all of us use a myriad of tools, most of which don't talk to each other.
Yeah, it's super I know.
Frustrating to try to get to the place where we have the tools to do the pastoral work well. And most of the time we just end up spinning our wheels, and it's unfortunate. And I think that also too, during COVID, during lockdown, people waking up to the idea of and the validity of online ministry, now is the perfect time to use these online tools to help influence the on-site church better.
Yes.
Because I feel like we can pioneer and create tools so much easier and prototype so much better, test them, get better, and iterate on the digital side that when yeah. we get to something that actually works well, it's going to influence the on-site church too. It's going to work together. It's going to make everybody better.
I know, and I think that's great because we just, you know, stepping away from this season of pandemic. And I look at the online church, right? We talk a lot about online church, and I think I love the way you started this in terms of, you know, we for decades, if not centuries, the church has been so focused in this Sunday gathering, which is important, which is it's part of the church life. So we gather on mm-hmm. Sunday, we want to celebrate together as a community. Like that's the community mindset of a Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. But I think all of a sudden the online church came in and it started to kind of bring that idea of the missional church for the modern age.
Right. And yeah, mission and identity expressed in new ways where, you know, even a lot of times I try to understand it better by using the metaphors the Bible uses of family, right? Mm-hmm. Family is so much more than Sunday dinner. Now, don't get me wrong. Sunday dinner is awesome. And everybody loves to go eat mom's cooking. And all of that is great, right? But there's so much more to being family than just that. And if COVID hits and we have lockdown and we can't have Sunday dinner, well, then we're going to get on the phone. We're going to get in Zoom. We're going to do all of these things, because as an identity of a family, we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
And there are other, so then there's other expressions of how we celebrate family other than Sunday dinner.
Absolutely.
And I feel like the church has kind of experienced that and now is kind of, I don't know, they feel this tension. And when I talk to pastors all the time, it's like, I don't know how to do this hybrid thing, you know? And the truth of the matter is the tools that are out there don't help you. You know, if anything, you have really good tools on one side and not on the other, and you measure different things and none of it talks to one another. How are you going to know if someone is actively being missional in their neighborhood, watching one of your streams one Sunday, and then bringing those people on site the following Sunday? Yeah. How would you even know what is really going on? And so there's the famous quote from Dave Adamson of that Metachurch book, which awesome book, by the way.
Yes.
He talks about that church attendance is not decreasing, it's decentralizing.
Yeah.
The problem of that decentralization is that there's no reporting mechanisms with which to even know how it's decentralizing or in what ways it's decentralizing. Well, okay. All the pastor knows is that there's fewer people in the building, and that's it.
Yeah, no. And I want to see Jason. We got to bring him in. I read his book, The Metachurch.
Oh yeah.
We got to bring him in for this conversation because here's what I would love to do. We got to explain a little more this decentralization of the church. I think most pastors, to be quite honest, are scared of that concept. I'm scared of that idea. Why? I mean, the online church was enough to scare some pastors to like, okay, this is going to keep people away from my church. This is going to keep, and I think honestly,
why would that scare a pastor?
Because pastors are used to people sitting in front of them. Like if people are not present here, and I think that's still there. And here's why I say that, Jason. As soon as COVID starts to ease, pastors kind of put the online in the side burner and they start focusing, I got to bring people back in the building.
I know, and that drove me crazy.
And that's like,
it's killing me inside.
That's what I'm saying. That just proved the point that they could not pass the idea that it's just church is a Sunday thing. Where I honestly think that this whole event, if you look at pre-COVID, COVID, post-COVID, helped to evolve online church to what really is supposed to be. And I think online church is not supposed to be the Sunday thing. And I think a lot of churches start to realize, some churches start to realize that. Some churches are like, I gotta bring my people back in, which again, I'm not making a statement here that should not happen, but I want to make sure that pastors understand that culture changes. Yeah. And when culture changes, you've got to figure out a way, okay, am I going to fight for something that I know I'm going to lose? Or am I going to fight for something that I actually got a chance to win here? And I think the chance that the church has right now is, okay, pause for a second, understand this technology. That's why I love what you're doing. I love what you're doing now because you're in the solution side. You've got so much experience in the church side and in the church dynamic that it makes it easy. I love what I do, right? We both now in a consulting environment, pretty much. Yeah. You know, what I like about it is because when I make an argument with a pastor, I like, dude, I work for a church. I know how it is. I know the struggles. I deal with those things daily. So I'm not going to come in here and say, hey, I got the magic bullet and I'm 15 years away from working in a church. No, I know exactly what you go through because I mean it. I think that's the beauty of this. But I think the church and online church is going to, it's evolving. It's evolving together. And I think now we start to see this new conversation and this conversation that's like, okay, What if your online church is, it's really like, can we really consider online church beyond the streaming? Can you consider that?
Oh, yeah.
I wrote a blog, streaming is the old classic service. I mean,
right. Yes.
It's the old traditional service.
The traditional service,
And I think that's part of the dynamic. I think, but again, people are being connected through it. We went through that experience ourselves where we had to kick back to streaming in order to rebuild our audience. So we go through phases. We go through this evolution that the technology is taking us through. And I think
the explain a little bit about that, though, because I think there's a lot of churches that are, you know, we're in the same boat as you. And explain the process of going back.
I know. It's kind of funny because we actually, you and I, we went through a similar transition. We had this brilliant idea. Let's pre-record everything. Let's turn it to a different experience. And I still think it was the right move at the moment. So we did this. We changed the experience for an online experience. For people sitting at home, what the experience should look like instead of me just watching what's happening on stage. So we designed the experience for an online audience. We are able to, I think that's, I didn't know this term before. I didn't look at that way. But I think it was our first step to decentralize the church. Why? Because my audience flipped. I had an 80% audience from the physical church compared to 20% of new, of outside the church. And all of a sudden, that flipped. Now, I got 80% of my audience that never put a foot in my church.
Never in the future.
Never in the future. And then I had a 20, 15, 20%, depending where there. That actually, it was people from our church that was like, I'm going to stay home and I'm going to watch this. But we saw this evolution even after the church opened up again during COVID. But we saw the audience flip. And I said, that now we're achieving the goal we want. We want the online to be that, to be a space for people that the unchurched, the unsaved, the people that are looking for answers to find through the online church. And we found that. Well, we went through a little bit of a change last fall when the lead pastor left.
Well, that'll be a change.
I know, right? And here's the first impact is that at first, I was arrogant enough to say, you know what? For the online audience, doesn't matter. Whoever we put in there will be totally fine. Well, I was wrong. I was wrong. Because in reality, the online experience, because that's all they have, they don't have the environment. They have just what they see on screen.
Right.
It becomes more personality driven than you think.
Oh, I believe that. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it's the connection is the delivery. What connects the audience, what they see on the screen, is the delivery. If that delivery is not there, the way it has been done, people are going to be like, I'm going to switch the channel. I use an example for this, Jason, is when Jay Leno said, I'm retired.
Right.
So he said,
perfect
I'm done.
Example.
Well, they left. They brought Conan O'Brien 2 months into it, and the audience said, nope, that's not going to work. So now NBC kicks Conan O'Brien out. Yeah. Jay Leno comes back. And now they bring Jimmy Fallon, who actually the audience said, no, I like this guy. Now, looking inside this, why NBC decide to kick Conan O'Brien out instead of like say, hey, you know what? Let's just work. Because they knew it would cost a lot more money to flip the audience than to adjust to the audience one. They didn't want to change the audience. They didn't want to flip the audience, meaning let's lose everything we have with Jay Leno and build a new one. They would have built a new one. Conan O'Brien is also a famous guy. He got his audience. And he built a new one at TBS when he went there to do his show. So that was not the issue. But to me, that was the challenge for NBC was we got to flip the audience and we don't want to spend that money. It's too much money.
Yeah.
Well, as a church, we don't have the luxury of saying, yeah, the new guy is not working out. So, dude, we're gonna fire you. You're gonna find a better speaker than the audience that we have.
Sometimes that happens though too. I mean, I know of churches that are like, they're bringing the new guy in, and there's like some expectations,
yeah,
that are written in his job description, that you're going to increase attendance by X percent.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to increase giving by X percent in the first 5 years. And if you don't, you're accountable and you could, you know, be let go for the next guy. And they have the same type of, you know, there are church cultures like that, that if the talent doesn't measure up, they'll find somebody else.
Yeah. So what we did, what we did was, okay, what will it look like for us to flip the audience, actually to go back and because we realized that the other pastor moved on, he's in another church, he's already preaching, and now we see that the audience is moving there. The online audience just followed him.
So the new pastor stayed in town?
Yes. I mean, he moved to another state, but online is not an issue.
That's true. That's really true.
He moved to another state.
Right.
I mean, we realized, like, because you remember, we were so connected with our online audience through house campuses. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. I had a house campus that had been with me for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Call me and say, hey, we're not going to be able to stick with a new guy.
Okay.
And we're moving on.
And they're moving to the guy that
online.
Before online.
Yeah, just following exactly.
Whoa. Now that right there is like the perfect example of what you just described. I wouldn't, you know, we use this idea, you know, being personality driven. I don't know that that's the right term for the deepness of a relationship that
I'm not saying that
feel.
In the world, yeah. I'm not saying that in a
right.
Bad
no,
way.
I know you're trying to say, but I just want to make sure it's not misinterpreted.
Yeah.
There is something very real about the relationship.
Yeah.
That a pastor and a speaker has with his flock. That's mm-hmm. real. And if you ignore that, you do so at your own peril. And so the crazy thing now is, especially post-COVID, location doesn't matter anymore. And you just hit the nail on the head. If I resonate with a particular relationship that I have mm-hmm. with a particular person, or I used to be there, I used to live in town and I really love this church, I really love this guy, and now I moved, or the guy moved, like in your case, there's nothing stopping me from continuing on that relationship.
Exactly.
There's nothing stopping me from
because that audience believes already that the digital ministry is real.
Yeah.
And now there's nothing stopping them from following the people that they connect with. Because see, that's the thing. They're not online because they have hopes to go back to the physical building. They're online because that's their point of connection. Now, the new guy came in, the model that we had, the pre-recorded with questions and all that, that's where he was not good at it. He was just bad at it. And he and I have several conversations on it. It's like, man, I'm not the other guy. You say I'm not. I cannot communicate on the camera like that. But when he got on the stage, when he preaches on the stage, he was a whole different guy, which everybody in the live audience just loves him because he comes across extremely authentic because he is. He is very comfortable. That's his arena. That's when I said, I'd rather change the model and flip the audience instead of change the pastor. Because I won't be able to change him. And it was a hard choice for me personally.
Yeah, I bet. You're more mature than I would have been.
But it was the right choice for the ministry.
Right.
And that's why I made that decision. Wow. Like, I hate it because I was like, we're so on the right track with what we're doing. Because we're actually experiencing what the decentralization of the church could look like.
I know. I know. And when once you taste that and you understand it and you live it a little bit, it's hard to go back. So I'm like, kudos, dude, that you were able to make that call.
So we had to rethink how we do online church. So we just like, let's rethink what this looks like. And that's when we start going through these changes. We went back to streaming. By going back to streaming, I stopped the bleeding. It was amazing. I stopped the bleeding. Like the bleeding immediately stopped because people start connecting with this guy now because he's so comfortable.
That's fascinating.
He's so comfortable. And actually, we start growing. But then we start taking actions in all the other aspects of the online to continue the what the decentralization of a church for us looks like in a new model. And and that's when we launch a brand new platform with content for kids, students, adults, weekly podcasts with opportunities to engage in each one of these ministries and all online. So our online ministry called CC Live, we launch a platform called CC Live Plus. And
that's
here's
good.
What
that's
I
good
like.
Marketing right there.
Yeah. No, and here's what I like because you just mentioned that is now this platform does not attend only people from outside, but now connects people on the inside from the people from the physical church. So now the physical church and people from outside the physical church, they're in the same place.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And I do. And the realities of that and understanding that are huge when you begin to merge audiences.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, you were mentioning before, like the traditional service, you know, versus the contemporary one. You know, there's others that, you know, they try to do a blended service. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so you get the best and the worst of both. And what you're doing is you're like, you're taking these audiences and you're pushing them together, which interestingly enough, depending upon your culture and depending upon the way that you do ministry, you might find that the audiences aren't as separate as you thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, we don't have tools that measure or talk back and forth. We have no idea who our audience even is, you know, let alone if they're the same people or not, just in different, you know, they're doing different modes at different times. And that was one of the things that I learned in right when lockdown lifted, because we had been doing content for the living room. It was designed for the living room, promotes conversations, helping parents pastor their kids.
Yes.
It was beautiful and everybody was cool with it. All the way up until the moment that we opened up in the building, and instantly those people who loved it the following week hated it. And here's why. Here's what I didn't think through and was, you know, that was my fault. They wanted to stay connected to their church. And in their brains, that was this church service that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so their point of connection, even though in my mind, it's a little twisted and I'm almost voyeuristic watching other people have a church experience and somehow stay connected that way. But it was the best they had instead of creating one where they were, which in my opinion is far superior, more scalable, all of those things. That's not what they wanted. They wanted to stay, they felt like that they would, if they didn't do that, they would lose their connection with their church.
Yeah.
And that was something that I hadn't considered in that way, because I just don't think that way. So, but I got, you know, they let me know real quick, you know, feedback. It's like, hey, how come we can't see the stream? You know, I want to see what's going on in the building.
I'm like, yeah.
Well, then come to the building if that's what you want. But they, you know, they had something going on, or they, you know, were scared of whatever, you know, and didn't come in the building, but they wanted to stay connected to that somehow, because that was their source of identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sunday dinner, that was their source of identity. And so when you take that away and you can't do it anymore, it's like, okay, well, we'll make do. But when Sunday dinner is happening and I can't go now, it's different. Somehow it's different. And so I think, you know, we're both learning kind of the same lesson, but in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably approaching it way more mature than I did, because I was just so incredibly disappointed, because I got to experience a decentralized, you know, more personal.
Yeah.
I feel like in many ways it helped people grow spiritually better than, you know, the Sunday show, but apparently that's not what everybody wants. And so, okay. You know,
it's just
killing me inside.
No, it's frustrating because you have all this thoughts going through your mind. It's people are more religious than Christian. People are more, people are more traditionalist than actually open to the changes. And I mean, all this, and you're right. I think in reality, for a lot of people, is their source of connection and intimacy with God and people by the environment, by seeing or experiencing the environment where they used to. And I think during COVID, there was a reality. I think we departure post-COVID, we departure for the, this is for the online audience, for the online church. We departed from the living room experience to a more individualized experience. And I think that's what I think is changing now moving forward is how can I provide for a person a community that's outside the living room. I think the living room experience was a substitute to the church experience that I didn't know. For some people, become a new model of church for them. But it's still, it's connected. It's replacing something. It's not adding something to my Christian life.
Yeah, it's not just that either, but what takes priority? I think even in the prevailing model of church, they still do small groups, you know?
Yes.
So they figure out a way programmatically to take a big group and subdivide it into smaller ones for what those smaller groups are good at. And that is a sense of intimacy and connection and, you know, belonging and being known, right? You get that a whole lot easier in a smaller group than you'll ever get in a bigger one. However, in the bigger one, you get all these other things that you don't get in the smaller one too. Like, you know, the hazers and lasers and the worship and the dynamic speaker and all of those other things, right? It's less conversational. But, you know, it's nice, too. It's different.
Yes.
Where I think a lot of the prevailing model of church, you know, the Sunday thing, that was the most important thing. And then you have this small group thing that's the add-on, right? And you could also argue that the online digital expression of that was very similar. You had the stream thing going on. You had, you know, online, you know, small groups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Crazy thing. When COVID happened and all that stuff gets flipped, that was really disorienting, not only to the leaders of all of these different ministries that had a certain priority that now no longer exists, but also for the people.
Yeah.
Because their sense of connectedness and stability and belonging and identity is now in a different place than it was before.
Yeah.
And I feel like one of the things that you did such a great job and probably still doing such a great job of is in your smaller gatherings, they have a sense of network where they're connected to something much larger than just the little group that's meeting together, church in the bar, whatever it happens to be. And that's the part where I feel like maybe we missed it and started with the wrong thing, maybe online. Mm-hmm. If we would have done like a lot of folks are doing in the VR space, where they're concentrating on the small conversational groups first before you do anything else, I think that's, to me, it feels more holistic and more organic. I don't know. It's just, I think it puts, it doesn't put the cart before the horse. No, you know what I'm saying?
I think we're gonna need to spend the next like few weeks talking about this term, the decentralization of the church. One, because I think pastors need to really understand the opportunity, not the challenge. It's the opportunity that comes with it.
Yeah.
Because I think some pastors may see like, you guys are trying to split the church, divide the church. No, actually, there's real opportunities here. You mentioned virtual reality, right? We just spent a few days in Kansas City having this conversation.
Yeah,
I thought it was powerful because what came to my mind is, physical reality and virtual reality doesn't change the fact that they're both reality. They're both real to people. And I think in the online church, we're learning that. But I think going back to understand why decentralization is important, because that's, I think, the way the church will reach this new generation coming out. Because We cannot try to reach this generation that is actually open to all this technology and all the ways they're connecting to each other. And we still try to make the case for, yeah, but you know, Sunday morning, you gotta be in my building. So you have all these generational challenges right now where they're connecting, they're having conversations. I did the survey. I mean, we heard the numbers there, and but I did some survey and get to the point in the US alone, just in the US, that you may have at some point 95 million users of VR daily. I mean, just stop for a second and think about the number of people. Now, this is not even 95 million people with their VR devices. Meaning it's yeah. kind of crazy to imagine. But again, when you just put the VR for a second, on the side for a second, and think about the number of people that are online right now. And the opportunity that we have to just, okay, what church model should look like in that environment? Let's stop thinking of online as the Sunday thing.
Right.
And let's stop of church online as a church service.
Right.
And let's start looking at the online church as the opportunity to connect in a way that actually the culture can actually take it in.
Right. What, and that, when you talk about culture, it's not just like general culture. It's online culture or even platform subculture. What could be native or contextualized to that subculture in particular, just like one as a missionary would contextualize to a different tribe somewhere or to a different culture somewhere else, or even on the other side of town, you do church differently so that it matches the culture that you happen to be in or the culture that you hope to reach. And I think to your point, you know, we're being imperialistic with the methods that we're using online. That's because we're using methods. We're using methods that work really good in this environment, and we're imposing that on a different one. And then we wonder why it doesn't work.
Exactly. And I think the church, again, this is the great opportunity. This is the great opportunity because I think we have so many. COVID was a school. It was like going through like an online church university for everybody. And you know what I mean? And we'll be able to just learn how people respond, how people connect. Now it's time for us to apply the lessons that we learned. Now is the time for us to apply those lessons. And I think we got the opportunity now to do that. I stop all my online groups. Like I stopped them. Like they're all gone.
Okay.
And what I did was I went to Facebook and I created specific groups based on people's interests that we already have. Tell me what you're interested in. Well, I'm interested in cooking, or I'm interested in those. Here's the things that I'm connected with, what I like, what I do, or seasons of life. Some people are like young parenting groups, right? Or divorce groups, or there's a group meeting in our physical church. They start online, now they're going physical because they can meet their widows. They're meeting online. So here's what I did. I stopped all these regular online Bible studies. I took them down. It saved me a ton of money on Zoom by doing that. As you can see, Zoom is not going to sponsor our podcast eventually. And I went to Facebook groups and I set up these groups with leaders. And I said, this is a 24/7 conversation. Just let people walk in and have the conversation. So when we promote groups online, that's how we promote. Hey, where you are in your life, what season of your life. And maybe if we don't have the group, let me know. We'll set up, we'll set you up to lead. But find the people they have interest with and let this be a constant, let your group time be a constant conversation, not a 1 hour that you miss down a week. And that to me, Jason, that to me personally is the future of online groups.
Okay, so here's the next question, follow up on that.
Yeah.
Because I love that idea. Because I feel like it's probably, it would lend itself more towards mission than mm-hmm. the other approach. Because my gut tells me there's your average unchurched or de-churched person that is more likely to join that Facebook group on that interest topic than a Bible study.
Yeah.
That I'm just, that's just my gut.
Absolutely.
If you do Bible study stuff, you're gonna draw people that are interested in that, the Bible study or the church service.
Exactly.
Not you know, you don't get evangelistic opportunities that way. So I love that idea, but here's the follow-up question. And this is one, you know, just one that I know is coming from, you know, pastors who don't want to blow up everything. Does it work? And how do you know if it does?
I know that works because the conversations that are going on in groups. Because here's the deal. The leader of the group, he's the one being trained not to lead a Bible study. He's being trained to lead a conversation.
Yeah. Or one could argue, lead a congregation.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Because again, for example, the leaders of these groups, the instruction and the direction I give them is make sure that twice a week, you're going to put a biblical thought into something based on that group. So see, the group for divorce is a scripture, but the scripture is not like, here's an encouragement to you today. The scripture is actually comes followed by a question. How does this actually apply in my life in the season that I'm in? Mm-hmm. And then let's have a conversation. And then, so he gets this conversation. It's biblically based, the conversation. Mm-hmm. But the format changes because it's the format that people are used to. They're used to go to social media, comment on people's things. Now we're trying to bring people into a community where they have affinity with each other and they start that connection. Here's the interesting thing about that. You're right. Is that I'm not promoting this just to the online audience. I now promote this to the physical church. And then people are like, I'm going through this. Let me join this group.
Right.
So I think that has
Wow, been, that's fascinating. So you know you're doing it kind of like, okay, I'm drawing a parallel here that we find in scripture when you see Jesus giving parables of situations where he was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see Jesus talking about VR because nobody knew what he was talking about. He's talking about things that people already understood and probably are, you know, objects or props all around him at the time, you know?
Yeah.
When he's talking about the fig tree or he's talking about the wine press, it would not surprise me at all that he just happened to be walking by a wine press, you know, an actual wine press.
Exactly.
So what Jesus is doing is he's picking up on the affinities and the context.
Mm-hmm.
of wherever he happened to be and injecting the higher story ideas, the spiritual realities to all of everyday life. And that's what you're doing there in these groups. And genius, you're doing it asynchronously because that helps a ton on the front end of a lot of this community building stuff because nobody has time to just drop everything and, you know, consistently do anything.
Yeah.
You know, we don't even watch our TV that way anymore, where we stop life at a certain time and a certain day of the week. Nobody does that anymore. And we don't do it weekly. I can tell you that much. And so, but we have that expectation that they do that in the church context when they don't do that for Netflix. And so there's some really good principles I think that you're surfacing that actually probably match the context and the culture that all of us are living in right now anyway. And you're adjusting the ministry model to, you're still using scripture. You're still praying for people. You're still interacting with people. And I would imagine the one another's and all of that, that Jesus tells us to do in church. You're just not trying to cram all of it within an hour in a place, in a building. You're spreading it out and you're letting it be asynchronous, which I think is And especially on the front end for new people, that's going to really work well.
That's my, like, you can imagine right now, I think one of the groups that we start to see growth is the one about finances. And because the goal is, I always, you know, tell leaders, keep the conversation real.
Yeah.
Let's like bring the gospel down on earth a little bit, because sometimes we kind of, we like to keep the gospel so elevated, so hard to reach, because it makes feel like it's a really this mysterious thing that God does. In reality, that's exactly what you said about Jesus. He always found a way to relate, make it relatable. The context is important, right? We say content's not king anymore, context is
context.
King.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's missing many times on how we do church and how we do groups. We like it there, and I know this may sound judgmental, I don't mean to be that way, but I think we like the religious aspect of some of those things that we do. We like that we can say we have 50 small groups in our church that meet together for an hour every week and they study the Bible. And I think there's only positives there. There's no negatives.
Right. But there's nothing wrong with that. That's 100 hours of time invested in the community.
Exactly.
That's great.
If that's going on in your church, don't take that away. However,
but don't think that
how many more how many more people you're missing. Right? That's why I said this is not a challenge, this is an opportunity. This is not a challenge. It's an opportunity for the church now to grasp what's ahead, what's coming. And I love the fact that, at least in my church, they allow me to build this gigantic lab that we call my church.
That's so cool, dude.
That we can try these new things, because there's, and I know for some churches, like, man, you're just thinking, you know, you cannot even see the box anymore. You're not thinking outside the box. You cannot even see that. And I know. So, I mean, it becomes a challenge. But I always tell people, if I'm going to write a book about things that I try and do not work, I don't think we have enough paper on the planet to really print this book. And but people never write those books, right?
Right.
People never write those books. But the reality is we try a ton of stuff, and a ton of stuff doesn't work. But that's how we learn the things that work. How we learn the things that actually going to work. So I think church should not be afraid. And I think this conversation on decentralization of the church, which that's really, that got me. That's why I'm trying all these new things. Mm-hmm. Because I you know, this new model of doing groups, this new, no, not model, even way, this has been there for a long time. We're just putting extra
functionality. Yeah, it's kind of recapturing some of the decentralization that we had to have. I mean, just think through practically and logistically in the first part of the book of Acts. There's no way that there is a temple, an auditorium big enough for everybody. There's no way that happens.
Yeah.
Right? They had to be decentralized from the very beginning. And I feel like some of what we're discovering in the online space has been nothing but a gift from Jesus to help us recapture what we've lost from the beginning. Which is awesome.
Absolutely. So I think we got a chance here. We really have a chance. And I think I'm encouraged. I want pastors and church leaders and volunteers and online pastors to be encouraged by what's coming, because there's a ton of opportunities here. The decentralization of the church is not a bad thing. It's not a bad word. It's not, but it's not something going to hurt the church. I think it's going to continue to build the church. It goes back to what Jesus said. He is the rock. If he is the rock, if he's the foundation. Those things are just how you actually stand on it. You stand on that foundation. So regardless what the model looks like, I think to me is a matter of the church. You start to realize, hold on, these things are not here to challenge me. These things are here to actually, they're doors. I've got to figure out if a door the church want to walk through or not. I think not every church is going to walk through the same door. And I think for some churches, this opportunity is coming right handed. I think, you know, J. Paul. That guy amazes me, because he's like, he is the model that I have been looking for a very long time. I you know, you always hear about big mega churches trying to establish the model on new things. But now here you have a church of 200 people in a physical building. Mm-hmm. And he's the leading voice, one of the leading voices on VR.
Right.
Which is amazing. That's what I'm saying. Anybody can do it. We say this all the time.
Well, not only that, but what I love about J-Po too is the context and the theological backdrop for what he's doing. It's not like he hasn't thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
He's put what he does in VR through a theological rigor that most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if you read his little paper thing.
Yes.
Or have read his, you know, he puts it on his, you know, on their website, how they do it.
Yeah.
You know, here's why. Here's the theological background for why we do what we do. Man, it's very few people that I've met that have actually thought it through that way. And, you know, I got a chance to, in Kansas City, you know, over barbecue, just like debate back and forth and try to figure it out, because, you know, he had some ideas that in my mind are like, I wanted to push back on, not to argue, but to learn, because I know that he's thought about it. And if he's thought about it, like I've thought about it, and we're coming to different conclusions, I want to know why.
Yeah.
Because maybe there's something I missed, you know? So when he's talking about how that physical is always better.
Yeah.
That, you know, that was a trigger for me. and so that goes way back for me. And so, you know, I got all up in his grill over barbecue and asked him, well, it just unpack that a little, because I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I'm just trying to understand. You're in VR, but you're saying physical is better. Somehow that, you know, doesn't seem logically consistent. And better for what exactly? Define that one. Because I feel like in those, the devil's in the details on what your definitions are, better for what. I think, you know, we ended up learning from each other, you know, and that's what I love about communities like this, where you get to bounce around these ideas and even disagree constructively so that we can learn from one another.
Absolutely.
We need that in the same way where you find disagreement, constructive disagreement in the New Testament. And the church got better because of it. I want that to happen.
I know. I'm excited. We're going to have him with us here for 2 weeks.
No, that'll be fun.
Yes. We'll have this conversation. And so we can look forward to this. J-Po coming in and having this conversation. I think, Jason, we got to get more into this conversation with more people. I mean, there's people. I say this, I mean it. There's so many people there doing this they're faster than I am. They're smarter than I am. And those are the people I want to hang out with, because I want to learn from them. And we the community that we had in Kansas City for 2 days, I'm looking around the room. I'm like, man, what am I doing here? and at the same time, I was like, I'm so glad I'm here.
Right.
Because I'm learning from so many people. Just as a reference for people just listening, is we got together 20 churches, 20 some churches, to talk about virtual reality and meta church and all that stuff, metaverse, right? And all this thing that's developing and happening. And man, that afternoon we talked about mental health. Mm-hmm. It was a powerful moment. And we'll probably need to unpack that in the next few weeks too. But man, I don't want to go too long here. I know we're trying to keep this to a time, but it was good to reconnect, dude. It was so good.
Yes, absolutely.
Now we got to do this again. We're going to be more faithful now. Coming back and have these conversations, but it's going to be good. Yeah. It was good to connect with you. Man, we got to keep moving.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For whatever reason, Jesus has asked us to come along him as he builds his church. I don't think we're worthy of it, but I'm so grateful. And I think we're going to give an account for how we responded to his lead on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so let's do it, man.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Online Pastor Coach Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, onlinepastorcoaching.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, and many other podcast platforms so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. If you like this show, you might want to check out our ebook, A Local Church with a Global Reach. Joey and Jason are available for private coaching. Just send us a message. Now go make a global impact for the kingdom until next time.